Hi, I'm Len Wein, creator of Wolverine, Swamp Thing, and God knows so many other characters, and you're listening to Behind the Panels.
They can be a great people color, they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 76 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's filled with jolting tales of tension and suspense. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
That was an anticlimax.
It was, wasn't it? I was waiting for so much more.
In this issue, a comics collector in Brazil had his stash stolen. We know from experience that Brazilian jobs are the most painful. Then we get our first look at Captain America the Winter Soldier trailer. It's about a returned US soldier unable to find affordable housing. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, Revival by Tim Seeley and Mike Norton. All this and more coming up after these completely misguided messages. This is Behind the Panels.
Here it comes, the official Green Hornet bike badge. The two-way radiating flasher flicks from the emblem to the hidden picture of the Green Hornet. Look on boxes of Murray's Fudge Town, Scooter Pie, Gaucho, and Mr. Chips, and send for your Green Hornet bike badge today.
Yeah, that was how you get your free Green Hornet bike pants.
Because that's what we all want.
Yeah.
To go with the robot pants.
Oh, flashback.
Yeah. Flashback humor.
That's what we call a callback in the business. Hey, fellas, how have we been doing?
Yeah, good, man.
Yeah.
Busy.
Pretty
busy.
Worked out, I guess.
We've been doing, like, I think when we get to the what we've been reading section this week, we can legitimately say we've done something comic related in every medium, almost, except maybe the cinema, which will be next week.
Or moving furniture, in my case.
Yeah, that was the...
Although I moved little statues, so I guess that is part of comic books.
Exactly, you know, that's part of your... If you've got the Batman Arkham Origins statue, you've got the one in the collector's edition, you know it's part of the Batman holding up people series.
That's the first thing my lovely wife said. She said, boy, he just seems to hold everybody up.
Unless you got the super collector's edition, which is the Joker standing behind a desk.
That's thrilling.
Yeah.
It lights up, though, apparently. So.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Well, I don't think we should waste any more time because with this thrillingnessness.
Go see Captain Phillips if you haven't seen Captain Phillips. That's the only non-comic book thing I did all week. I saw Tom Hanks get hauled up on a boat, so...
They should make a comic book out of that, and it'll just be like the orange lifeboat for like 33 pages.
Adventures at sea.
See, open a goddamn window in here.
That's actually from the film.
Yeah. I don't just make random puns.
That's like a 10-minute portion of that film.
Yeah.
Open the window. No, not even joking.
Because only in America.
It goes as far as like you can't smash the window because like... Anyway, moving on.
Dave's gone bye-bye.
Apparently.
We're going to hit up, because I'm going to leave Dave here in the present, while I go back in time in the Wayback Machine.
All right.
So here we go. Strap yourself in. This one's weird.
The police put Professor Sheepdip in jail.
We could never have done it without the help of Super Pup.
Oh, it was nothing.
Why are you taking the bow? If you think you're no Super Pup.
Me? Well, anyway, it'll be a long time before Professor Sheepdip gets out of jail.
You're so right, you're so right!
That is amazing.
Reminds Professor you of Sheep a Dip?
Nightmare. I if you haven't before at some stage in the past, look up The Adventures of Super Pop on YouTube, because it was an abandoned pilot from 1958.
I believe you can also see it on our site, can't you?
You can see it. It'll be embedded in the show notes this week. It is weird, man. It's it is people basically with animal heads on. It's like... it's the adventures of like a parallel universe where the animals are the...
You just got to kind of ask yourself, what sort of drugs were they on when they were thinking of this?
They were desperate to cash in on anything Superman related at this stage. You know, I think they even made a Supergirl.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I mean, it was during the whole time where they were like, you know, the Superboy spin-off and all that. They tried to do Super Pop, which had nothing to do with crypto.
Oh, man.
Nothing to do with crypto. Man. It was just another random thing. I mean, that's weird. But television has gotten better.
A little bit.
Over the last 50 years. And that was an awesome segue, man.
That was. That was very professional.
Respect. Yeah.
Which is why we're going to...
I was thinking of Underdog.
You know what? And I've gone, what, 6 minutes without mentioning Captain Phillips?
Hey!
What we'll do is, because...
Who's the captain now, Richard?
I'm the captain now.
I am the captain now.
Only in a medic. What we're going to do is we're going to look
just
at
a fisherman,
some...
Richard.
This is not behind the Phillips.
Sorry. Next week on Behind the Panel.
I think we're going to just change the name of the show to Behind the Phillips, episode 77.
Or Behind the Longo, hey. Apparently.
Yeah. We'll be playing this back at the 100th episode, you know.
I have no idea what's happened to this show.
All those people who
wrote in on our thing, who say in our iTunes thing, we love the show because you always stay on topic. Sorry.
You asked me what I've been doing this week. That's what I did this week.
That was so 5 minutes ago.
We're up to... Dave, when I press this button, you'll know what section we're up to, which is completely ruined my segue, but it doesn't matter now. We're just going to go into this.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
The first thing I've been reading were the terms of Dave's contract, and it turns out we can get rid of him. So that's
I'm
fine.
Just not going to say anything for the rest of this whole show.
It's fine, Dave. You just know which movie you're not allowed to mention from this point onwards. The TV show segue was about because there have been 3 episodes again of TV shows this week. Of course, there was Arrow episode Broken Dolls, which was fabulous. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Girl in the Flower Dress, which was different.
It was actually okay. I didn't mind it.
And The Walking Dead Infected, which I think was a marked improvement.
Which I still haven't seen.
Which, yeah. There was a definite return performance. It was actually something Dave was saying a couple of weeks ago about, probably last week, when we were talking about the whole comic book connection in there. And you were saying that when Michonne sort of handed the comics over when they were getting off the horse, it was almost like... don't worry, we got this covered.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
There's a real hero moment in this week's Walking Dead where it's kind of like they're almost saying to the audience, we're back, people. This is what you've been waiting for. This is us getting back on track. And we know. And it's kind of, they actually almost say, let's put all that stuff behind us. Let's get on with it.
That's amazing.
You know, and it is. You feel... I know I've been kind of
cheated
before by it, but it just feels like they're going for something different.
I was saying to you guys before the show, one of the things that I tend to do is I tend to, with Walking Dead, always gather up about 4 episodes, 5 episodes, and then watch them in blocks. Mm-hmm. I think ever since the Sophia thing, I've kind of been burned. But I will make a promise that I will catch up on Walking Dead before next week's show, because I think we may need to pace this one out. So
yeah, no, look, Walking Dead is I think one of those shows, like the comic itself. Like I binged the first season and a chunk of the second season, but it is one of those shows that does reward that patience when it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it really stuffs you up if it's bad. Like
I
the second season, you know.
Let's say that this season is the best season of the show so far. How do you
based
sort
on
of,
the first 2 episodes? Let's go there. Yep.
Yeah. Like, but is it too late?
I wonder that with a lot of shows. I mean, even something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we're 5 episodes in, and even though it's a marginal improvement. If I wasn't a Marvel fan, I would have stopped watching by now.
I agree. The thing I just heard recently...
So you, sorry, just before you go on, So you're right, Dave. I think it clearly hasn't lost audience because it's gained audiences, but I think there's a very different audience it's going for with Walking Dead in terms of the comic audience and the television audience.
Yeah, I was about to say, because The Walking Dead actually has a zombie audience. Mm. I mean, the bottom line is, if zombie fans who have never read the comic at all.
Or seen a Romero film.
They're just going, oh my God, zombies are cool. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Mm. Comic book fans have been mixed on Walking Dead because it is so different to the comic book that I remember the hatred that was being spewed on that series at the end of the first season.
Yeah.
I was on a show, in fact, where we were really bagging out on it because it was like, we were sitting there going, this just isn't the show.
I think you've just come up with a solution there. What the next episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. needs is some zombies.
Yeah, there you go.
Marvel zombies.
Apparently, or vampires. One of these two things will actually make it take off.
You know what else could have used?
Morbius, the living vampire.
You know what else could have used zombies? Captain Phillips.
Oh, hey.
We said we weren't mentioning that anymore.
There's a good point about Captain Phillips. In all seriousness, I'm not trying to make a joke here. Where in the making of that movie, they're saying like the real story is enough to make a good story.
Yeah,
we don't need to change it to add elements to falsify information.
Which is kind of the same as going to the comics. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the disappointing thing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And even though this week's episode, which was the girl in the flower dress. And I got to say, Skye probably annoyed me more than ever this week.
But at least they added some depth to her character.
That's true. But the thing was, like, she made some really stupid decisions in the episode.
Really stupid.
And I don't know. There's something. I mean, look, the internet's pretty much in agreement that the characters, nobody can connect to them. What we'd love to see is them just scrap everybody and like have a second season. Have a Maria Hill centric. S.H.I.E.L.D. thing. Yeah, it's like Maria Hill and Coulson and some new people.
Or just...
And Ming-Na Wen.
Yeah, Ming-Na Wen and Coulson. Let them go off on their own.
Yeah.
Because those two are the best thing in that show.
They should sort of have an X-Files kind of element.
But the thing is, like, here we are, five episodes in, and they keep mentioning, it's like, take a drink every time they mention the Battle of New York. Yeah. Take a drink every time they mention the stuff that we're not showing you. The problem is, S.H.I.E.L.D., one comment I read this week, and I wish I could remember where it was, best comment I read on it, which is like, the promise of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was that like you were saying, Dave, like the comic book origins, the promise of S.H.I.E.L.D. was always going to be that there's so many stories in the Marvel Universe we can't show you in a 2-hour movie. Here's our chance to show them. They haven't shown us one yet.
No.
They've been rehashing the Extremis storyline from Iron Man 3 and a few other, and they keep mentioning the Avengers. Mm. We really haven't gotten beyond 2012's blockbuster movies yet. We need it to establish its own identity.
And they had a perfect situation there because when they, in this week's episode, they've got the character Scorch, what you named him,
yeah.
You know, and the subplot where the people took him in and said, we can enhance your powers.
Yeah.
I immediately, as a comic book fan, my brain immediately went to Hydra because this is exactly what happened with Spider-Woman's origin story was that she was developing some sort of powers. Hydra took her in and enhanced her. And I went, oh, we're going in that direction. And then it's like, no.
It's funny you should mention that. I heard one internet discussion that was suggesting that at one point Skye is revealed to be going to be Spider-Woman. Or, you know, they go down that track. But we saw her in her underwear this week. So, no, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
What's this girl with a flower dress?
That's the name of the episode.
The name of the episode, yeah.
Sure.
I think long and the short of it, that show needs a hero.
It needs to put in some of the stuff that is what makes Marvel films fun to watch. Yeah. It needs powers.
Even the S.H.I.E.L.D. comic books have the heroes in them.
Exactly.
A show that doesn't have a shortage of heroes is Arrow.
And I got to tell you, this week's Arrow was a corker.
Oh, my God. Now, look, obviously, we can't give too many spoilers because it hasn't screened here in Australia yet, but this is an international audience, and we're watching these US iTunes. It's available. It's also available online on the CW website. So it's out there, people. Go and have a look at it if you get a chance. Two words, because it was a teaser at the end of episode one, and it's been all over the news, Black Canary.
Hotness.
Yeah. We won't spoil who the big bad was.
But the reveal is amazing.
It's amazing. It'll be a big thing for DC fans. Even if you're only a fan of the recent DC films, you'll get how significant
this big
bad is. And I
think if Christopher Nolan's Batman films were still running, we probably wouldn't be able to go in this direction.
No.
Now that that's finished, we can kind of move into whatever direction we want to, and boy, is it a corker.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. The fact, I think there was also subtle hints in there that we might be getting a Birds of Prey at some stage because she was in a clock tower
I love that.
That was wonderful. We even get, spoilers, people, spoilers, you've been warned. We even get a canary cry at one point, and how they do that in a powerless environment is really clever. I geeked out. Like, I had multiple geekgasms, David.
I did too. My son and I watched it together, and we were just like, yeah.
It's the sort of thing, if we were watching it together, we'd be high-fiving, like, just throughout the whole thing.
I will throw out one little thing, though, which I thought was interesting, which is my son, who is a big comic book geek like the rest of us, and in particular, a comic book movie geek.
Yeah.
He loves the comic book universe. He's actually said that he's probably almost out on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know people who are like that. As I said, if I wasn't a big fan and I wasn't doing a weekly podcast, I probably wouldn't pursue it because I'm not connecting to anyone.
Yeah, he's not impressed by
it. There is no hook. There's no hook.
Mm. But he's almost like the target audience.
Absolutely, hey, yeah. He is. Yeah. And it's not sinking on him. So you sit there and go, I don't know. Look,
and ratings have dropped every week.
Have they dropped?
Dramatically.
No, we're still sitting around 7.5 million in the US.
Okay. They dropped 30% in the second week. They dropped a little bit more in the third week, and then they kind of plateaued out.
Yeah.
Enough so that ABC has confirmed that there is a full season on the way.
Yeah.
So they have committed to the full season.
They're not bad numbers.
No. And look, ABC owns Marvel. Sort of, they own ABC. Yeah. Disney owns all of it. So Disney would be crazy not to at least run the season.
Thor will probably give it a boost.
They just need some courage. They have to avoid this like John Harrison Star Trek kind of stuff where it's like, we should not save our heroes for an eventual film.
Yes.
We should use some of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
like, you know how everybody was excited? Maybe this guy's going to be Luke Cage.
That was a great big disappointment that he wasn't.
Just put Luke Cage in the show. Like,
yeah.
You know, here we are 5 episodes in, and I'm not saying they don't need to pull all their cards at once. Maybe even give us a few more, a bit of information about Coulson.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because that would go a long way to, like, satisfying
and
us.
And we keep getting hints. He actually talked about getting the thing through his chest.
I know they're keeping that as a tease, but a tease is no good if you've lost the audience who cared.
Can I tell you a theory that I posited to my son this week? And I thought I'd float it on here on the air, and we'll see if I'm actually right. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know how they keep referring to Coulson as basically he went to Tahiti?
Yeah.
He got stabbed and then he went to Tahiti to heal.
Magic.
My guess is Tahiti, quote unquote, is Asgard.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's magic related.
Yeah,
particularly given that we're going to get Scarlet Witch happening in the next Avengers film. I think it's Joss really kind of planting the seeds of some magic.
It's either magic, and somebody I read online, somebody's actually posited maybe it's Doctor Strange, which has brought him back.
And I got to say, we've got a news in here about one film that Kevin Feige has confirmed, but he's also talking about. Doctor Strange and those sort of films.
Well, Doctor Strange has been floating around for the last couple of
development.
Years. Yeah.
We don't know which phase it's going to be in.
The other theory, which is the one I think, is that I think Tahiti is Asgard. I think Thor took him and they healed him and they brought him back.
Yeah.
I think that's the gambit I'm going with.
I reckon it's something like that. I reckon you could be pretty close. comics. We've also read some comics this week.
I think there's only really one we need to talk about.
There's actually two I want to talk about.
Okay.
And they're both Image comics. One of them is, of course, our favorite lady, Kelly Sue DeConnick's Pretty Deadly. We'll be talking about this for a very long time. I think it was back in early in this year. I can't remember. February, March, something like that, when we interviewed Kelly Sue.
She talked a lot about this.
She gave us a lot. I mean, she pretty much laid out the first issue for us. So I felt as though I'd read it before almost.
As soon as I saw the bunny at the beginning.
It opens with a dead rabbit talking to a butterfly. They're narrating the book. This book is nuts in a good way. And it's often difficult to understand because there's a lot of ideas going on in there. And that's probably been one of the big criticisms of it, that people are having trouble penetrating it. And one of the stories we're going to talk about later is about some people who've really reacted against it in a negative way, but I think an incorrect way. But it's a hard book to read simply because it's it's a bordering Jonathan Hickman territory, you know, in terms of its surrealism, in terms of its massive world building. It's kind of more Jonathan Hickman East of West than Infinity.
Issue one overcompensation kind of problem with it.
Yes.
You know, you're wondering how it's going to sustain itself for free issues.
It's like she's put out all the ideas she has at once.
Yeah.
Because she did say in her interview they weren't sure how many issues they were going to get. So perhaps as the arcs progress, we're going to see, you know, maybe an issue will concentrate on one of the, you know, 17 characters that were introduced in the first issue. A lot of characters got introduced.
I really like the writing. I really like her wordplay, and I really like the way that she structures it.
It's a beautiful book.
It's a beautiful book, and the artwork is gorgeous. Mm. The problem I had, and Kelly Sue, I love you dearly, I didn't understand it.
And I think that's because I got confused with the plot with the little girl going on the road, and there was the, you know, discovery of something else, and there was Big Alice, and there was also the fable running through it about Death herself. Ooh, ooh. Death rides a horse. Death rides, you know,
the Dr. Seuss stuff.
The Dr. Seuss stuff, yeah. And like they were all happening simultaneously. And you know, you can't fault Kelly Sue for ambition, because this is, I said in my review, this book is different. Not just different for her, it's different to anything else that I've read this week, this month, probably this year.
Mm.
I like that. I like difference. I like something new and different and exciting. I like the fact that it's not another superhero comic. I like the fact that it's a Western, but it's not just a Sergio Leone inspired Western. It's drawing on Hodorowsky and all those kind of surrealist Westerns as well. I love all of that. And I love the artwork. It's Emma Rios is magnificent artwork. They worked together before on a book called Osborne, which was great as well. And they're a great team. Jordi Belair does the colours and they're gorgeous. Really, really gorgeous.
It's a beautiful looking book.
If you can find a copy, because there are only 57,000 of these were printed, very, very, very small print run, go and find a copy, go and pick it up. Otherwise, Comixology has got it digitally as well on the image.
It's $2.99 on Comixology. But yeah. Can I just put out a warning? I ended up having to pay for this book twice.
That's right, you did too.
Because Comixology, for some reason, I bought it, and then it said it was having download errors. I reset my iPad, I did everything. Nothing would come through, so I went to the Image app. And normally when you buy something, the sale, it will register that you bought it already, because they're all basically going through Comixology anyway. But then it proceeded to charge me a second time and downloaded perfectly fine off the Image app. So go straight to the Image app on this one.
Yeah.
Just in case. So Kelly Sue, I paid for it twice.
Will you guys recommend people to continue reading it?
I'm going to read the second issue. There's no doubt.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm in it for a good 5 issues at least.
Like, it's in my pull list. I am picking it up every month. A copy will arrive for me, whether I ask for it or not. I love Kelly Sue's writing, and I love the, as I said, I love the ideas in this, but the first issue is a tough read.
It is, and I'm hoping after a couple of issues, things will start to fall into place, and we'll start to,
not the whole, like, let's rip it up in the store.
No. We'll come back to that in
a
minute.
We're not Comics Inc. here.
No, we're not Comics Inc. Look, I didn't think it was bad. I just didn't understand it, but I'm hoping that will actually start to unfold.
Like I said, Jonathan Hickman territory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I have the same problem with Jonathan Hickman's writing, is that I get a little bit confused, you know. And she knows Jonathan Hickman; they're friends. He probably came in as a story editor,
probably. And look, you know, but as I said, I like the fact that it's different, and I want to see where it goes.
Yeah, and look, I'll support anything Kelly Sue does, so you know, I don't mind paying twice, because you know.
Now, the other book I read this week, which is fantastic, and there's a bit of a Winter Soldier connection because we're playing the trailer this week, is Velvet Number One. Now, this is a new book out from Ed Brubaker and Steve Epting, who were the team on Winter Soldier. This is another spy story. Imagine Miss Moneypenny had a 20-year history as a spy. She's now retired to a desk.
Oh, that's awesome.
And one of her, it's obviously not James Bond, but it's basically that. It's one of the top agents of this little group called X-14, and I think there's no... I imagine it's a play, because 14 is 007.
Yeah.
He gets killed, and no one can understand why, because he's like the best. No one can touch him. You know, it would be like if James Bond got killed. You know, who would? So she goes out after 20 years away from the service. She goes back into the field to try and work out who killed him. And it's fantastic. It's moody. It's set in the 60s and 70s. It's really that kind of old school.
I haven't heard about this book before.
It's an ongoing. It's brand new this week. If you can go and get I think it also had about the same print run as Pretty Deadly. It's part of Image's last quarter push. If you can find a copy, again, it'll be available digitally.
Yeah.
And always go to the Image Comics app if you can, because I think the money then goes directly to them rather than the percentage that Comixology probably takes out.
I'm not sure how it works, actually, because they're all coming from Comixology. They're all built on the Comixology engine.
It's that. app. So I don't know how it works, but I think you can download things directly from Image. Mm. So I always go straight to the source whenever I can. But Comixology is great. It's like having your own comic
store.
Comixology is just convenience.
Yeah.
It's having an entire comic book store in your pocket.
And they're having a big Halloween sale at the moment too,
Speaking of Halloween, if you're going into your comic store this week, they're doing a thing like Free Comic Book Day, except it's for Halloween. And they're giving away a free spooky comic on Halloween on the 31st. So if you go into your comic book store, and I know they're doing it here in King's Comics in Sydney, but it's part of the Free Comic Book Day, sort of under the Free Comic Book Day banner. So it's the same sort of organization that's pushing it. Go in there, there's a bunch of free scary comics that they're giving away. There's cosplay competitions. You get the whole set.
So on the 31st?
On the 31st. Excellent. So if you go in and do go into your local comic book store, just check to see if they're doing it. I think it's a really great, fun way to get people in reading
comics.
That's
great. No, that's fantastic.
Look, you know, we've read other things this week, including Battle of the Atom, but I think we're going to talk about it in a lot more depth next week when it ends.
Mm-hmm. When's Infinity ending as well?
It doesn't. soon, I think next month it ends. I think because Inhumanity kicks off in December.
Right.
So
as you said before the show, like the final issue is also the first issue of the next one.
Exactly.
That's the Marvel way.
The Marvel way, man.
But actually, it's funny you should say that because I was talking to someone earlier this week, and they were saying that it was Nima, in fact, who was saying that. You know, a good cliffhanger should be that. A cliffhanger is the first page of the next arc or the next story.
Yeah, but sometimes you need to take a breath.
And the problem is that when your entire industry is run on getting people to... when the entire miniseries is basically an ad for the next miniseries, that's a problem. I have no problem being sucked in. Comics are a serial format. That's by their very nature. But I do have a problem with being cheated.
You just don't want the whole 12 issues in your memory to be, oh well, they fought about something and then we moved into another fight.
Exactly. But we'll see. You know, we've still got one issue to go. Let's see what happens with that.
It could tie into something.
It could. You never know. Look, other stuff I read this week included Rat Queens. It's a great ongoing series. Go and check that out. For all the latest reviews, see Graphic Bits reviews on behindthepanels.net. Or you can also find us on comicbookroundup.com, where you can compare what critics say from all over the web. But for now, David, I think it's time for the news headlines. What do you reckon?
I think so.
Let's hit it up.
Kevin Feige has confirmed that Black Panther is in development for an introduction to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Chris Somney and editor Steve Wacker have revealed that the current run of Daredevil will end with issue 36 in February. There is no word yet on the all-new Marvel reboot.
Bridesmaids, Kevin Feige. A new one! Oh, dear, oh, God. Bridesmaids creator will produce a new film based on the Charles Schulz peanut strips.
Firefly's Sean Mayer will join Arrow as the villain Shrapnel.
Cartoon Network has abruptly pulled Beware the Batman from schedule, as they did with Young Justice and Green Lantern, the animated series, before it. Probably because it's crap.
Los Angeles-based Comics Inc. got in hot water with Image Comics this week after ripping up a copy of Pretty Deadly Number 1 in front of customers as their form of review.
That's a bit rough. Ryan Reynolds. Enough said. No, Ryan Reynolds says development is inching forward on a Deadpool movie. I'll believe that when I see it.
Yes, it's Ryan Reynolds, and inch will do it. Three armed men invaded the home of Brazilian comics collector, taking 7,000 issues from his collection of 200,000 books. The heist is said to be worth more than $150,000.
A Bill and Ted attraction at Universal Studios was retired for its portrayal of a stereotypically gay Superman.
And finally this week, the first trailer for Captain America: The Winter Soldier has arrived.
Woohoo!
Let's have a listen.
Coming up on the drop zone, Cap.
You do anything fun Saturday night?
Well, all the guys in my barbershop quartet are dead, so... No, not really.
You know, if you ask Kristen out from statistics, she'd probably say yes.
That's why I don't ask.
Too shy or too scared?
Too busy!
Is he wearing a parachute?
No. No, he wasn't.
I joined S.H.I.E.L.D. to protect people.
Captain, to build a better world,
sometimes means tearing the old one down. And that makes enemies.
Are you ready for the world to see you as you really are? Look out the window. You know how the game works. Disorder, war. All it takes is one step.
We're gonna neutralize a lot of threats before they even happen.
Thought the punishment usually came after the crime.
SHIELD takes the world as it is, not as we'd like it to be.
This isn't freedom. This is fear.
You need to keep both eyes open.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out? Your work has been a gift to mankind. You've shaped the century. And I need you to do it one more time.
I need to go clean up now.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I'll admit that I wasn't that excited. Even though I loved the first Captain America film, I was a little bit dubious as to whether these directors, and, you know, we hadn't heard much about it. And this is literally the first we've seen of it.
Yes.
Apart from the odd photo and poster last week. My God, it looks cool.
Yes.
I am so stoked for this film. I can't tell you how stoked I am. I also love the fact that he goes through like three costume changes in it.
Yeah.
He's got the Steve Rogers Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. costume. He's got his original classic costume. It's like, this is going to be awesome. And can I just say, the Falcon.
Oh, the Falcon, yeah. I mean, it's almost blink and you'll miss it. But how cool is that? It's and they're looking, you know, Dave was sort of miming it while we were listening to the trailer, but the bit at the end where Winter Soldier catches
and they have perfectly captured Winter Soldier.
Yes.
He looks exactly like he does in the comic book.
If you don't know who Winter Soldier is because you haven't read the comic books, we won't spoil it.
Yeah,
it could be a major reveal,
yeah.
But he's in the trailer. But
if you do want to find out more about him, at the moment there is actually a really good Winter Soldier comic book running.
Yes.
Which is, it's post all of this events.
Yeah.
And it's Winter Soldier now, and it's basically him and Black Widow.
But you
as
really
a team.
Should, you really should, if you're reading comics, go back and read the Winter Soldier arc.
Yeah. It's great stuff.
From Ed Brubaker. That's amazing. Look, you know, this is the example of what we're talking about before. Going back to the comics, taking a classic run and putting it up on screen and just letting it do its thing.
I just sat there watching this trailer for the first time, just going, oh my God. And I just everything I was excited about with Thor, and I am excited about Thor, this is the one I want to see at the moment. Mm. You know, this is just, because I adored the first Captain America. We all know. I just adored the first Captain America. And this one, I just like, now we're going straight back into another strength.
All again. We need now is that Guardians trailer and I'll be...
I'll be happy, man.
Yeah.
The day that trailer comes out.
Which
we
should probably see early next year, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll see a Guardians trailer closer to this as
we are
release.
Going to the movies next week. We're seeing Thor the Dark World.
I'd like to point out that we're going to see it tomorrow.
Tomorrow night. week and a half before the US. Stay to the end, because I'm told that there are two end credit sequences for this one, and one of them is directed by James Gunn.
Oh, really?
So I can imagine what that is. So
that's
very
fantastic.
Very, very excited by that. We're about halfway through the show, which is about the point where we traditionally kick off the pick of the week, and I see no reason to change that this
Not
week.
At all.
It's our very special Halloween episode, so let's go into the pick of the week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
In a small town in rural central Wisconsin, the dead have come back to life. For Officer Dana Cypress, being a cop means dealing with a government quarantine, media attention, religious fanaticism, and bloody murder. But what does death mean in a place where the lines between living and the afterlife are blurred? This is the work of best-selling author Tim Seeley and Eisner Award-winning artist Mike Norton. This is Revival.
That music, if you couldn't pick it, was from Fargo, which was very appropriate.
Wonderful.
Of course, it was another Midwestern town.
Yeah, absolutely, because this is a rural noir.
Yes, which is really, I wanted to say that in the intro, but it's really hard to say.
It is hard to say.
It's like that 30 Rock episode, Rural Juror.
Rural Juror.
This is a fantastic book. This is a...
Thank you, David.
Yes, of course. No worries.
David suggested this one because we wanted to do something sort of spooky for Halloween, and there was a bunch of stuff that we came up with. We were suggesting, David suggested Nancy
in Hell.
another one that Dave suggested was like the Freddy versus Jason versus Ash kind of thing. Couldn't think what to do. There's a great book out this week, which we're going to do in a few weeks' time, called Hellboy the Midnight Circus, but we didn't have enough time for us to all get it and read it. So we thought we'd finally do Revival, because we've been talking about doing it for a very long time. And gave me a chance to catch up. And what a wonderful book this is. This is, Image brought it out,
I guess. It's probably the best book that came out last year besides Saga.
Yeah.
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 It's interesting because I've been collecting it and I haven't read it until now. And I guess at the back of my head, it always just felt like it's another zombie book and it's another horror book. And I just kind of, it looks pretty. I'll just put it on the side. But it's not. Mm. It's not a zombie book at all. This whole concept of the revival, it's only like 25 people to start with. And they're just brought back to life. They're not shambling zombies or anything like that. But there is something about them. Because you notice that when there's
something about everything.
Yeah, something about everything. But you notice that when they lose it, for instance, they start to get that what looks like they're bleeding tears and stuff like that. So there's something about them. And they do lose their cool.
Yeah.
You know, at certain times.
And it's, I think, Dave just captured when he said there's something about everything in this book, because it's the whole thing is rife with symbolism. It's about a town where, obviously, the dead have come back to life. So there are religious fanatical groups that are out there. Trying to get in. The whole town's been quarantined, we should say. And this is where a lot of the tension comes from. You've got that sort of tension in a small town where nothing's a secret.
Yeah.
we soon find out that everybody's got a secret.
Yeah.
You know, this is like...
it's like Twin Peaks.
It is exactly what I was about to say.
Very good draw. So, yeah.
And I couldn't agree more. This is the only thing it needs is a damn good cup.
Yeah.
and
some cherry pie, Diane.
it's a book because you've got like your main characters in there. You've got the cop, Dana Cypress, and her father is the sheriff of the town. You've got her sister, who we find out very very early on in the book is one of the revived, as they become to be called. Mm. So they've all three of them have got secrets. You know, they've all got something that they can't share. And then, as we find out more in the second arc, the father's got a secret, something about his past as well, which I think now that we're 14 issues in, we still don't know entirely, you know, what his story is either. You've got the fact that the people who are coming back are all starting to do strange things. You've got rednecks living out in the wood who
You've got meat harvesters.
The guy with the buzzsaw.
You've got this trio
corrupt politicians.
Yeah, you've got this guy.
And let's not forget a ghost-like alien creature walking around the woods.
And who kind of looks like the alien in that Simpsons episode where it turned out it was Mr. Burns. Yeah. The spoilers for a 20-year-old episode. it has also got this guy who's like an exorcist running around, and he turns out to be a nasty piece of work. All these elements, and none of it seems, after the first couple of issues, none of it seems terribly strange.
No.
You know, you've got beautiful artwork by Mike Norton as well.
Artwork.
You know, the covers, the interiors, they're all gorgeous. You can imagine, you know, like Fargo, you know, got these pristine snow-covered exteriors and the most gruesome, horrible stuff is happening against this beautiful background. You know, this is what is engaging. I mean, like, you know, the art draws you in, but the story certainly keeps you there.
And the characters are just so strong, which is something that's sort of rare in comic books, you know, like this kind. Like characters that you can remember by appearance, by silhouette. Like,
but what's interesting is that there is a real similarity in the drawing style of the two sisters.
I was going to say this.
But you never get them mixed up.
Yeah. There are almost times when you think, you know,
they both have freckles.
And it's like when they're the same thing, but when they put them in the same panel together, there's a world of difference between the two of them. And also, it's the way they behave and
it's the personality more than anything else, because the sister has a very radically different personality than the cop.
And it seems only certain people, there's this ghost creature walking through that certain people can see or have contact with more often.
Particularly children.
Children seem to have contact. Dana's got a son that she, was one of her past sort of secrets is that she had a son when she was in high school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her son seems to be having contact with this ghost-like
creature.
The son's
giving the creature toys.
Toys to play with, you know, Sergeant Peppercorn or something.
Yeah.
Admiral Peppercorn or something. Yeah, no,
and drawings, I think, the child.
Drawings. So you actually get, as you go on, there's a comic within the comic as well, because the kid starts drawing a comic about the happenings
of the
town.
We're also having the studly older guy who likes to sleep with everybody. He's hearing the ghost
as
well.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's like a former, like, aerobics, celebrity. He did a series of...
What's that with that one scene where somebody sends him a picture? Sure, he's saying, this is body because thanks to you. And he goes, well, your abs could use work, but this will save my personal file.
He's great. He's a hound dog that doesn't let up. There's a whole, because there's this reporter as well that's running through, and she's got her own arc that goes through as well. And there's a storyline with the two of them in the second arc, as well, possibly even the third arc where we're getting up to.
That's the second arc. That starts in the second arc.
Because we're up to 14 issues at the time of recording. What we're mainly talking about are the first five issues.
Yeah. I've read up to eight, and you guys have finished up to date.
But it's one of those books where you start reading it and you can't. It's hard to stop.
Yeah, and it just sort of the more that you read, the more that it colors the issues that came before, and it just proves that Tim Seeley and Mike Norton know exactly what they're doing with this. They're not making it up as they go along, like a lot of these long-form stories.
Well, the Twin Peaks comparison is really apt, because I think here we are 14 issues in, so a year and a bit into this book, and there's still... We get the impression that we barely know these characters yet. There's so much about them that we know their main motivations, we know what's driving them, but the town's still under lockdown, we still don't have resolution to the main issues here, and we still don't know what the secrets are of all these people.
I love how certain things are revealed too. I love the fact that you forget you're reading a book that is actually about something that's quite sinister, and you'll be reading it like Twin Peaks, and you'll start going, and there's humor in it and everything else, and then you'll end an issue with, like, there's that one issue that ends, I think it's actually the end of this arc, where the brother and sister-in-law that are having the affair, she gets into her lingerie, she gets into bed, and the guy's had his throat slit.
Yeah.
It's like he's in there oh, that's rough. Yep.
It's pretty gruesome, too.
Yeah.
It's a book that doesn't mind mixing in the grotesque. I mean, at one point, there's an elderly woman with one saggy, saggy breast just hanging out, wanders into a funeral. You know,
exactly. And further on in the second arc, when you find out about the body harvesting, is that school bus collides with a truck and just body parts just spray out across the floor.
But it's done with such taste too. Like it's not over the top. It's not.
No, it never feels exploitative or sensational.
Yeah, and part of that. You said, like, you know, it doesn't feel out of the ordinary.
Well, and part of that is the character.
It's not a construct. It is. Yeah, it feels organic. It feels
because the characters go, oh my God, what is that? And they call on the radio, we've got body parts all over the road. Can you get that? So it's all very matter of fact.
When you get further on to the arc, there's this thing where they've got a whole lot of town volunteers who were coming in to help sort the body parts and put them in. Of course, there's nobody else to do it.
No.
So they just have to do it, you know? And it's kind of, it deals with the absurd and the grotesque in a
matter of fact. Just so people understand, the body part harvesting, which is actually in the second arc, but it's because outside of this town, they believe that it's either an act of God or who knows what it is that's caused this revival. And so they're paying big money to have the blood, basically, and the parts of these people, hoping that it'll give them eternal life.
It's kind of like the whole tiger penis or...
Yeah, exactly. And then they're saying they can't get the actual revivalists because there's only like 25 of them, but any part from any person from that town will do.
Yeah.
And so they're buying everything, you know? It's like, it's a morbid concept, but it's great.
Yeah. So, which is when you get the dealings of what's happening in the shed.
Yeah, the shed. I love the fact the guy comes in the shed and goes, yeah, you're going to hear lots of noise out in the shed. We just got a new saw. It sounds like somebody's screaming.
And they're like, okay, just keep it down after 9. Yeah, look, this is, again, look, one of those books where you might overlook it because I don't think it's not getting quite the same attention that, it's certainly gotten its praise. And in fact, the people who are quoted on the back of the book are people like Jeff Lemire. Mm. But
there's something very Lemire about the story, actually.
It is, actually. Yeah. If you can imagine one of Jeff Lemire's small towns that he talks about, but suddenly the dead come back to life in it, it's exactly it.
Yeah.
But I dare say, though, with a bit more depth than Jeff Lemire.
Ooh.
Oh, I don't know about it. I think Lemire can get pretty deep.
That's not dismissing Jeff Lemire. I love Jeff Lemire.
No, because I think the difference between Jeff Lemire and this is that Jeff Lemire would make it a psychological thing.
Possibly,
whereas they've gone more for a literal thing.
I think Jeff Lemire would focus down on one concept and
one character
and do that
very
well.
We've seen that with Sweet Tooth.
Yeah. Whereas this will juggle hundreds of concepts from like confronting death and mortality and then, you know, like this is quite an impeccably done.
Well, actually, let's talk about that for a little bit because I think that's one of the really important things about this book is that it is, it's not just a book about the dead rising from the grave. Mm. It's not a book about an investigation. It is laden with what is, you know, the essential question, what does death mean now that these people can't die, you know? What does the outside world think? We're only getting hints of that. And that's something that I'm really keen to see develop.
And why was it only those people?
And it's so interesting because when you do revive, you seem to lose a certain part of yourself that's unquantifiable. And as the story progresses, without spoiling, certain revivers lose more as they live longer. And it's kind of like, at a certain point, we have to
I'm not up to it yet because you guys are a little bit further along than me. Can I just ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
She goes to the sister goes to the delicatessen and there's the very chirpy, thank you. Yeah. You know, how are you doing? And then she whispers to her very quickly, we meet at the town, blah, blah, blah. We meet at the town. You should come down. So obviously she's a revival. She's a revived as well.
Yeah.
Have we actually seen that meeting yet?
Don't know if we have actually.
I don't think so. I'm curious to know what's going on.
They mention it again later on because some
the recent runners think I think has been focused on sort of revealing what the ghost-like creature is.
Yeah.
Its origins.
Isn't it that soldier?
And then there was a.
I don't really want to get into that. I guess for spoilers, but it's not. It's not that.
Oh, it's not that. Okay.
There's a confrontation because there's a few of them, and there's a confrontation with the three brothers as well. That's something that comes to a head at the end of the second arc.
Yeah.
So look out for that.
Oh,
as well.
Cool. All right. I've got lots to look forward to. Still,
yeah. So. And this is a book. I mean, look, there is every arc has a beat, has a definite ending. So the first trade is a great place to jump on. But just this week, Dave reminded me before the show that this is a great time to do the show because a hardcover has just come out with the first 12 issues, I think?
I think 11.
11,
think.
Okay.
Maybe 10?
Something like around that thing. But
and it's got like some original art in the back, I think, and some...
This is when you definitely go out and buy that first trade or that first arc to see if it is what you're after.
Mm.
Because I think even if this trade that you've got in front of you here, it's the first five, yeah? If you don't want to read more at the end of that, then that's fine. But I would say you will.
Yeah.
And you're going to immediately want to...
I think if you just see some of the covers, which are some of the best covers at the moment, you'd probably want to buy it.
No, yeah.
The covers are just stunning.
Is it the first issue that has the cover with her and the sickle?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fantastic. If you go back through the cover story thing that I've been doing, I think a lot of revival stuff turns up there. There's probably every issue. There's a great one where she's like sewing the... she's like red stitching and she's all sewing up because
I love that. And I love the fact that she's sitting there and she's in her bra and panties and she's got all the scars all over her body. She goes, there, you're all fixed just like me.
Yeah.
You know,
because like... she's, and then that's kind of a real metaphor for her as well. Because we get the impression that it's not the first time that she dies once in the book and she's obviously died once before there.
Mm.
But we get the impression that she's experimented a lot or
she's also been blowing up a couple of times.
Yeah,
the ski-mobile sequence where she blows
that's
up.
That's true.
Basically.
She gets herself beaten up in a
and she's just laughing on the ground when she's laying there all in pieces and she's like, ha ha ha.
There's actually one really nice little funny scene in the second arc where she's her sister goes to serve her lasagna and says, careful, it's hot. Oh, don't worry about it. So look, you know, I definitely recommend this book. It's a great Halloween read if you're looking for something spooky to read this week, or at any other time as well. You know, we're not that far into it.
It's not scary as well. It's not a horror book. It is a really
It's moody.
And it's got this atmosphere over the whole thing, and that's what it's worth reading for. Don't expect it to be like, oh my god, it's horrific, or oh my god, it's going to be terrifying. It's not that kind of book. It's scary in the way that Twin Peaks was scary.
Definitely.
It's just unsettling more than anything.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. Unsettling.
Yeah. I think, and there's going to be a TV show apparently.
Really?
They're working on one. The rights have been picked up by a network.
Fantastic. That I'm curious about.
Unless they go the Walking Dead way and just take everything we love about it out of it.
Alrighty, folks. I think that's about time we started wrapping this thing up. We can all recommend this one really highly.
Very much so.
Go out and buy the first trade. Go out and buy the hardcover if you've already read the first trade with us and tuned in this week, spoilers and all.
Absolutely.
So go out and get the second trade or the hardcover, or start collecting the monthly books. It's an ongoing from
when
Image
you read
Comics.
It, you'll realize that you we want, didn't, you we, want didn't, to we, didn't, we didn't spoil anything.
No.
Really.
No, yeah. Like it's
like you might think they're spoilers from listening to us, but when you get into it, there's the so bigger much picture more. Is like,
and yeah. I love the I gotta say, I really love the fake exorcist. He's vaguely, do you know what he feels like? He feels like the Constantine character from the movie.
Yes.
Not from the books, but from the movie, the Keanu Reeves version. It's kind of like that whole, or Michael J. Fox from The Frighteners.
Of course. Good. You know what that's I mean? That's a nice pull, man.
Where it's that whole concept of, yeah, I'm going to come in and do this exorcism. And then when he gets around, it's like, no, you just stop it.
All right, folks, I think we'll just wrap this up in a bow and say, go out and buy it, go out and read it, support these guys.
And happy Halloween.
And happy Halloween. We want you to keep reading this book because we're enjoying it. We want to know what happens next, so keep buying it so we get to see more issues, basically. okay, well, what are we talking about next week? Next week we are going to the movies.
Yes.
We are going to go and see, in fact, it's tomorrow for us, but next week's show for you guys. We're seeing Thor: The Dark World. The episode will be out just before before the US release date, we imagine, or around the same time as the US release date, because we're getting it a week early here in Australia. Yay! Which means
Marvel loves Australia, because we always seem to get them early. So.
Which means we'll probably get some other blockbuster 3 months late this year as Penance. Yeah. But
that's right.
As long as it's Avatar 2, I don't care.
Yeah.
Three or four.
They can wait as long as they like, those ones there. So go and see that movie, because we will be talking about Thor: The Dark World with spoilers next week, but we'll have a separate spoiler zone for that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we're really, really, really looking forward to that one. So until then, we don't have a lot of feedback this week. So let's just say, if you want to send us some feedback, go to feedback@behindthepanels.net. Hit up Facebook at facebook.com/behindthepanels. Or the best possible feedback you could leave for us is to go to iTunes and either look up Behind the Panels or the Geek Actually Superfeed and leave a positive review for us there, either as a star rating or as a comment, because that's how we get up in the rankings. And we've been doing quite well lately with those, so we will read out any comments that you leave.
Well, I would say that the Geek Actually Superfeed has been on the featured page now for weeks.
Yeah, so. It doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So, in fact, I dare say months it's been up there for. So,
very nice,
keep
guys.
Supporting us. Thank you very much for listening and supporting us that way. So keep doing that. Until then, you can find me on DVD Bits on Twitter. You can find me at therealbits.com. That's the REEL Bits, which has been updated quite a bit this week. So go and check it out. Of course, you can also find me on behindthepanels.net, and you can also subscribe to our other show, which is Geek Movie Club on iTunes as well.
Yes, we've actually got the feed up now, so you can actually subscribe directly to the Geek Movie Club, or you can subscribe to the Geek Actually Superfeed. It'll all go through there as well. And, of course, for those who are actually old Film Actually listeners, I actually had somebody write to us saying, oh, I'm glad I kept that feed active, because suddenly they started getting Geek Movie Clubs through there as well. So
we should say, though, if you're wondering what happened to an episode this week, we're not doing one this week.
Yeah. For the meantime, we're going to do it as a fortnightly show, just while we're still finding the format of the show, and then it'll probably kick off as a weekly show within the next couple of months.
And we just want to give a shout out before, Dave, you give your plugs. We want to say that one of the things we're looking at doing next year tentatively is a live show. And we really, really want to get your support on that. So all those things we mentioned as ways to support us, do those so we can get as big an audience as possible, because we're going to make a big live show for our 100th episode, which is really only 25 episodes away.
I know. It's kind of scary, isn't it? And so I forgot to mention, you can find me on Twitter at Dave McVeigh or on geekactually.com.
Twitter at Dave Longo or damngoodcup.com.
Well, fellas, that's it for show in record time this week.
I was about to say, we've come in a bit short this week.
We didn't make 52, though.
That's true. That's true. We could have been a new 52. Yeah.
We could have been a new 52.
Don't worry. We'll be like DC. We'll drop a couple of minutes before we go out. We are going out on a song today, which I'm not a huge fan of, but if you've read the first arc of Revival, you will get exactly why I'm playing this song. But until then, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm Dave McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
And this is Behind the Panels. I did it all for the cookie. Come on, the cookie. Come on, so you can take that cookie.